William on this presentation about ICRASAT. Our next speaker is Dr. Dino Kinting. Dr. Kinting holds a master's degree from the University of Manitoba right here in Canada and a PhD in agronomy and crop physiology from Queen's University in Belfast. He has a long history in management in international science in many countries, including India, Nigeria, UK, West Asia, North Africa, and Turkey. Today, he is the Director General of the what is called AVRDC, the World Vegetable Center in Taiwan. Welcome, Dr. Kinting.
Thank you very much indeed, co-chairs, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. I was perturbed slightly by our investment colleagues this morning and some of the comments yesterday because I got the impression that perhaps that the food crisis was over and that lots of money was flowing into the system. Well, I think that's a misunderstanding because the crisis is by no manner of means over. If we have still a billion people who are hungry and probably another 2 to 3 billion people on the top of that who are malnourished. And in fact, it is malnourishment that I believe is the issue we have to address. And I am attempting at our institution to develop an extremely pro-poor research program that addresses malnourishment and is also very pro-female. I know I'm not a female myself, but it's something that we will be talking about, I hope, a little bit this afternoon. We'll also be talking about human beings. They're a very strange species because, in fact, when they get poor, one of the things they do is to cut out some of the beneficial things that they should be eating. They go to eat a large, fairly boring cereal-based diet, and under that, they undermine their health. However, when they get rich, the same syndrome occurs. They eat too much carbohydrate, too many meats and oils, and they deteriorate their health. So we are dealing with a rather irrational and irresponsible species here. Here's a survey from Cambodia that underlines some of the things we were hearing earlier today. Prices have gone up and have stayed up, and as a result, people are cutting back from 3 meals to 2, meat's being cut out of their diet. And here's a very important point as far as we're concerned, is that they've also cut out vegetables of their diet unless they're growing them in their own home gardens. And home garden research is one of the very pro-poor things which I believe that we can support much more vigorously in future. The poor already have a boring and monotonous diet, and it's very imbalanced. If you take the blue line, which is the minimum recommendation for food and fruit and vegetable intake by WHO, you can see there are quite a few countries in Asia that are well below even the 50% recommended level. And most countries in sub-Saharan Africa are below that 50% recommended level for consumption of fruit and vegetables. So we do have a major problem at present of what people are eating. I don't often show pictures of nude men, but here in this particular case, I wish to make the point that yes, we have hungry people, but we also have a very large number now of growing obese people. There are more obese people than there are hungry people in the world. This has a major knock-on effect in terms of the economy and health, because as soon as you become obese, you then become liable for major diseases such as type 2 diabetes, skeletal problems, lower back pain, etc., etc., and it's something I've been suffering from myself recently, and I can tell you it's very ugly. But it is a neglected problem, and it's something that people don't wish to address at present. And one of the reasons why they don't want to address that at present is that we have a grave overdependence on very few crops. There's probably only about 10 crops in the world, most of the big cereals, that are receiving attention today. So I would have said the first and most urgent new research priority, Mr. Chairman, is to in fact go for cropping diversity. Because in fact, much of these crops have already been very well researched and the rate of return to research investment in them is very poor in relation to some of the alternatives. What are those alternatives? Well, we have a whole series of indigenous vegetables growing throughout the world which can in fact give a very good rate of return. African eggplant, for example, in Tanzania at the moment, in the Arusha area, it is the number one money-making crop for farmers. Now that it's catching on in African supermarkets, it's an area in which a lot of investment and money can be made by farmers. But all of these crops, which I'm showing you, have very good nutritional properties of one sort or the next. Slippery cabbage is something you've probably not been exposed to before. This is the major vegetable of the South Pacific. It is the nearest relative, the okra, but it is highly nutritious. But at the moment, no research has been done on this crop. The germplasm has not been preserved. The agronomy is unknown, and it requires research. And under those circumstances, you can probably not just increase the yields by 5%, but by 500%. Now, for most people in the room, they believe that if you eat vegetables, such as cucumber, lettuce, even tomato and cabbage, that you are in fact doing a healthy thing for yourself. Well, the answer is that most vegetables that we grow or eat in McDonald's or whatever have almost no nutrition in them whatsoever. Okay, tomatoes have very low qualities of vitamin C if they're red ones, and cabbage has virtually none. Vitamin A. And in fact, if you look at these two blue columns, you can see that these two vegetables are in fact very poor in nutrition for things like iron, folates, vitamin C, vitamin E, and vitamin A. However, some of these other vegetables which we've just been talking about, slippery cabbage, for example, moringa, amaranthus, sweet potato, have very high levels of all of these vitamins. And if you want to get your vitamin A requirement from cabbage, you might have to eat more than 16 kilos a day. Okay? If you eat moringa, just a 250-gram helping will be sufficient. Now, most of these crops are not receiving any research at all, and I ask myself, why? Why is it that we are eating things that are not good for us when we could be eating things which are good for us? And the answer is that I don't understand. However, these things may be good for us, but we have to make sure we grow them in a good fashion. Good agricultural practices. It's an easy expression, a nice thing to say, but it's damn difficult to do. And we currently in the developing world are having a crisis of overspraying of herbicides and pesticides. In some cases, up to 100 sprayings on eggplant per season. We're using a large quantity of grey water in peri-urban environments, which are laced with all sorts of bacteria, worms, etc. And any time you use sewage sludge in the developing world, you're absolutely sure to be increasing the heavy metal content of people's diets very substantially. It is interesting that on the news this morning that green leafy vegetables here in the US and Canada was the most, I think, salmonella prone, certainly the most food poison prone crop here in North America. Well, if it's bad here, you can imagine what it's like in Calcutta or wherever else you want to look at it. And you can see that fecal concentration, for example, and work done by IMI is very substantial. The other problem is that, as we've seen, much of the productivity in the fields is lost on the way to market. A, because gluts are created, because too many people are growing things simultaneously, but also that the difficulty in keeping vegetables fresh is a problem, and the fact that much of the processing being done is here in Western Europe and North America, and very little of it is done in the developing world. The potential for processing is very substantial. The potential for improving losses is very substantial. But what is needed are things like cold stores, good trucking facilities, and a whole range of other things. Under those circumstances, then a lot of progress can be made. Here's an example. ABRDC working with the Vietnamese Food and Vegetable Research Institute, looking at some very ordinary non-rocket science type of post-harvest preservation systems, can produce a whole range of these different crops. And in Vietnam now, The season is being extended substantially because people are able to preserve these things either as pepper sauce, tomato ketchup, etc., etc. We've talked about the decline in agricultural research funding already, but I would like to point out that various authors have said that agricultural research is one of the best investments you can make, and that the rate of return for, in this case, rice, fruit, and vegetables are particularly high in relation to other things. So if you're going to invest a dollar, you know where you can invest it now. And some countries are doing that. People's Republic of China and India are pouring money into agricultural research, and because of that, their industries are flourishing. But what I would say is it's the low-income countries, the ones that are not doing that, are the ones that should be receiving the public sector attention. So it is in the Nepals of this world, the Samoas of this world, and the others that we really need to work with. Not necessarily the Brazils or Indias or Chinas of this world, who are well able to look after themselves. So if you want to work pro-poor, you also have to think geography. And why should you be growing vegetables rather than anything else? Well, this is a very pro-poor crop. First of all, most vegetables, for example, 50% of vegetables in India are grown in land holdings of less than a hectare. Okay, it's creating probably 4 or 5 times the amount of employment as standard cereals. Incomes are very much increased, and the rate of income return is much higher because these are short-duration crops. Whatever is left behind, if you're not selling it in the market, you can feed to your kids and you can deal with the malnutrition. And when you deal with that malnutrition, particularly vitamin A deficiency, you're helping them to improve their mental capacity, avoiding stunting. Are you getting away from all of the problems associated with maternal health and the young nursing of children? All of these things require good, well-balanced diets, and vegetables can help. Livelihoods can be improved as well, and also infrastructure, because you can't, in fact, market vegetables without having a formal market type of structures, markets, roads, all of these other things, in comparison to staple cereals, for example, which you can market over the garden gate so these other things don't get developed. So this is very much a pro-poor effort, and in fact, looking at AVRDC research, something like 75% of all of the jobs created, both in the pre-harvest and post-harvest sector for vegetables, are specifically for women. So if you're looking to assist the gender issue, then vegetables are very much more gender sensitive in terms of helping women's development than, let's say, growing rice. And here's what I believe is the reason why our investment people are starting to pour money into agricultural research, not necessarily because they have the political will to deal with the malnutrition problem, because in fact they're starting to see riots and unrest and problems of national security being affected. Now that's interesting for me because I've just been at a conference in which the security people are starting to become interested in agricultural research for the first time. Because they see this as the soft side of defense. Well, if this is what's motivating the governments, I say, okay, that's fine, because if we can motivate them more strongly along those lines, then we, at least we can get some investment in trying to deal with malnutrition. And it's very clear that it isn't just the staples that this has to do with. Anybody who's lived in India has heard the story of the onions, which allowed one of the Indian local state governments to fall. The price of onions, the price of eggplants and other things in many parts of the world is just as sensitive as the prices of rice. So my final slide then is to make sure that you all understand that we're not going to see any cheap food again. Food is going to be expensive for the foreseeable future. And the more volatile oil prices are, and that means fertilizer prices and other things, then also, you're going to find it harder and harder to maintain food supply. But if you're getting volatility, if you have crop diversification, you have a much better way of balancing your risks. It's very clear that the governments have been quite complacent over the last 20 years and they have underinvested. But nevertheless, if what we hear is true from L'Aquila and all the rest of these things, and I'm not absolutely convinced it is true, but if it is true, then that investment is starting to flood back. But I would like to see it. I'd like to be able to get hold of it. I don't want promises, I want action. And until that money comes into my hand, there's not much I can do about it. And particularly addressing this major problem, nutrition, the World Bank has specifically said that there's an issue that falls between the cracks in the government, between the Ministry of Agriculture, between the Ministry of Health, between the Ministry of Education. And I believe that all of us in this room have to understand that that should be our principal target, because nobody else is dealing with it. And so that's why at AVRDC we now have the mantra which says prosperity for the poor and health for all of you as well. Thank you.